the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell, Sam Robson and Johnny Nicol with you. And Sam, yeah, a couple of big clubs to record on this episode, I guess, as we enter the final straight of our J1 season previews.
Yeah, really big clubs. Two clubs in the mire that are around the J-Pred top of the table for me. So I'm hoping that between us we can sort out my thinking at least in the next hour or so.
Rightio. And yeah, Johnny, it just dawned on me today. This season is rapidly approaching. We've got the Super Cup coming up on Saturday. And these two clubs are, likely to be candidates up and around the top six. So, it's going to be a fascinating chat.
Yeah, when we started doing these pods a couple of weeks ago, it still seemed that the season was ages away. But now, yeah, rapidly approaching, and we've got two heavy hitters to discuss in this pod. So I'm really looking forward to getting into it. How are you doing?
Excellent. Yeah, rip roaring and ready to go. And we will begin this episode by chatting about Nagoya Grampus after finishes of third in 2020 and then fifth with a Levain Cup title in 2021 wasn't enough to keep the Italian Massimo Ficcadenti in a job at the Toyota Stadium. Nagoya tasked former FC Tokyo boss Kenta Hasegawa with brightening up the fare for Grampus supporters. But after an opening day win over Kobe, they only won one of their next 11 and sat mired down in 15th. Three straight wins got them up to ninth, but they never rose higher until finishing with two straight wins that took them to an eighth placed finish. Hasegawa kept them tight at the back as they matched the champions by letting in the joint fewest goals, but only Fukuoka scored fewer than their 30 league goals. Talisman Mateus Castro led the way with 8, but received scant little help up front, at least until Kensuke Nagai arrived from FC Tokyo in the summer. Nagai was second best on the team with 4 goals, though of course one of those was the gift goal after Jordy Crooks' controversial equaliser away at Fukuoka at the start of September. So after a rapid rise from 13th to 3rd in 2021, is gravity simply kicking in, Sam? And what do you hope Hasegawa has learnt from his first season in Nagoya?
Well, I think he started to learn lessons towards the end of the season. They did get quite a bit better towards the end of it and made a couple of interesting signings that just kind of just gave them a little bit of boost. Kensuke Nagai, who Hasegawa knows really well, I think he kind of complimented Mateus quite a bit going forward. And then a couple of tweaks in midfield that he made as well. Ryoton Nagaki, who's not come back for this season, but he was a decent hand in midfield. But I think they started off and, they didn't concede too many goals, but the way that they conceded them was, I thought, the most disappointing. They were quite simple from set pieces and just like kind of goals that Ficcadenti's team would never have conceded. So, yeah, it's all right if you think you're being a little bit more open, but they weren't really. They were just being less rigid defensively and less on the ball defensively. But it seemed to click a little bit more towards the start of the season. So if he can just get back to that level of defence that Ficcadenti had and cut out the errors, I think they'll do very well. And they just need to find a little bit more help for Mateus. And in the window, they've not added too much, but in Kasper Juncker, if that partnership can really click, then Nagoya can click and get back up to challenging for the Champions League as they were under Ficcadenti.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely coming on to Juncker. Don't worry about that. But let's begin their off-season business with the transfers out of the club, Johnny. Veteran fullback Yutaka Yoshida. I mention him only because he's a former J-Talk team of the half-season selection back in 2021. Well, he's moved to Shimizu of J2 after making just 8 starts under Hasegawa. While in midfield, Leo Silva was let go despite starting every game but one of the first 29 of the season. The veteran was phased out towards the end of the campaign. And Kaya Sento, who we mentioned last week, has joined Kashua. He appeared in every league game, actually, in 2022, Sento, but he lasted just one season at Nagoya after his transfer from Tosu. The other big name, with all due respect to Yoichiro Kakitani to depart the club, is Japan World Cup squad member and EAFF MVP and Golden Boot winner Yuki Soma, the winger fulfilling his childhood dream of signing for Portuguese club Casa Pia. And Johnny, yeah, obviously want your thoughts on as many of those transfers out as you like. But yeah, Craig had a question about the logic behind loaning Soma to a Portuguese team that just got promoted to the top division. Is this really an upgrade for Soma, he asks? Can Nagoya really afford to loan him out given their offensive woes? And yeah, wondering in what world does it make sense, and whether Nagoya received a lot of money for the loan. Craig says he's completely confused by this move, and I guess it's a familiar pattern for supporters of certain clubs who let players go to Europe for peanuts.
Yeah, so I can promise, Craig, I'll do my best to try and answer this question, but I can't promise I can make total sense of it. But I mean, you know, I've lived in Japan for almost 10 years, and you know, when I first came, there was a lot of things didn't make sense, and over time, some things make sense, and even now, some things I don't really understand. I tend to look at J League clubs much more closely, as being much more similar to like a, what you say, quote unquote, a regular business than maybe in Europe. So if you think of, like, you know, Yuki Soma as someone who's come to Nagoya from a university, and within a few years of turning pro, whatever you think of his abilities, he has started regularly for a team that finished in the top half of J1 3 years in a row. He's become an international footballer, and he's played at a World Cup. So he was obviously highly sought after when he was coming out of university. So for clubs like Nagoya, he would obviously have to beat off a bit of competition. So it's a bit like trying to get good graduates out of a university in any other field. I think, you know, they offer like perks, like holidays pay, overseas placements. And the way I see it, a lot of J-League clubs, because the players have their hearts set on, I want to get to Europe, I want to get to Europe. The clubs will say, yeah, we'll facilitate that for you. You come and play with us for a few years. We will help you get your move to Europe. We'll even negotiate your like, I think in Soma's case, it's a loan move. As I believe, I think, is it Naoki Maeda before? It's a loan move, and then he had a broken leg, and then I think he came back for a bit of treatment. They sort of have this kind of backup plan. So Soma goes, it doesn't work, he comes back and he can play the rest of the season at Nagoya, or he'll come back in a few years. Because it's only today, I think, the J-League's Twitter page was talking about, you know, Shinji Kagawa coming back to Cerezo, and Usami going back to Gamba, and Uchida going back to Kashima. They're big in this story, you know, that the hero goes abroad, plays in Europe for a few years, then comes back to his former sides. And I'll be honest, I saw Casa Pia for the first time written down in katakana, and I couldn't work out who it was because I've never heard of him before, to be honest. Mm. But he's probably looking at someone like Hidemasa Morita, who went to Santa Clara, who's probably another Portuguese team many of us hadn't heard of, but he's now starring at Sporting Lisbon. So I think Soma's eyes are not trained on staying at Casa Pia. It's more catching the eye of one of the bigger teams in Portugal and then going on, because I think, you know, it's easy to look at someone like Mitoma or Tomiyasu and think, oh, look at all these Japanese players doing well, but it's probably going to take at least another decade of players progress, more players doing progressively better before it really fully sinks in, like how good Japanese players are and can be. And they don't have to do this step to like unknown club or an unknown league like St. Truiden, or, you know, these clubs at Casa Pia, Santa Clara, in Austria, Switzerland. No disrespect to any of these teams or leagues, but if you think about it, most Japanese players do not go directly to Bayern Munich like Usami or Fukui do. They have to take that step before moving on. So in terms of money, I mean, I'm never really sure. In terms of Nagoya, like in some metrics, they seem to spend a lot of money on wages, but then in other things, they've got a very small squad. And when they've had problems with Joe or Svierchok, they've never really replaced them. So I don't know how much they have. I think Sean Carroll did a really good piece when he was talking to John over the winter about transfer dealings. And I always get the feeling the J-League don't really want big transfers because, you know, the biggest transfers, if the fees suddenly shot up, then the biggest teams would suddenly have a lot more money than the smallest teams. You'd have that kind of disparity. But I think I'm going off the topic here. But, I mean, that's the best I can do. And I mean, Ben, you've been in Japan longer than me. So if I throw it back to you, is there anything like you think I'm off the tracks there? Or is there anything you would add in?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just I think it's just a system where the Japanese supporter doesn't feel that their club is getting fair value for an important player. But, you know, the club feel like they can't stand in the player's way, even though, as Craig says, is it really an upgrade to play for a newly promoted Portuguese club? Well, for us, you know, who, you know, I presume Craig is a Grampus supporter, you know, the passion in his question. So, yeah, he's frustrated that one of the Grampus's key players has gone, and seemingly for peanuts or for nothing. So I can see his frustration. But, yeah, from Somers perspective, I think you're right, Johnny. Yeah, he just wants to get his foot in the door somewhere and, yeah, try and get the attention of a bigger club, in inverted commas, not necessarily in Portugal, but yeah, somebody, another scout from another country, another club might be watching, and someone might catch their eye. So from the player's perspective, I guess it just remains frustrating that we can't keep our best players here. But yeah, we understand that they want to go on and further themselves. And from a supporter's perspective, we just wish that we got our club gets, you know, in inverted commas, fair value for such an important player as Selma is in the case of Nagoya.
Yeah, I think so, because Nagoya have developed a player that has been able to play in a World Cup, so you think, oh, he's got to be worth something, a fair deal, especially when you look at so many other countries and the amount of money that gets spent on other countries, players who maybe aren't as good as Yuki Soma. So, yeah, I think I can absolutely understand the frustration. He should have been, I mean, maybe once a loan deal ends, then he will go for a fee, but it's probably not going to be too much. And it's similar to Kawasaki, like they've just allowed Taniguchi, their captain, who's just played very well at a World Cup, to go for free to Qatar, who are absolutely not short of money, well documented. So, yeah, I can absolutely understand the frustration. I hold the same frustration with it. But just for just on Sommer, I think it's a really good move for him. Casapia, yes, they're a newly promoted side. They're currently fifth in the Portuguese league. They're in a European place. And it's a really good landing spot for Japanese players. We've seen it with Morita. It was a very similar situation, as Johnny mentioned. I think Santa Clara may even have been a newly promoted club that got into the Europa League, and Morita played there. Now he's playing for Sporting. We've seen Nakajima go to Portimonense, not the greatest club in Portugal, but he got a move to Porto. I don't know what he did with himself afterwards. That's a complete mystery. But you get those moves. And so it's been a good, like, even J2 players like Kanya Fujimoto went from Tokyo Verde to Gil Vicente. He's doing really well. He's one of their best players. So it's a great place for you to, for Japanese players to get themselves noticed, to get them, because whether we like it or not, European clubs look far more favourably on the Portuguese league than they do on the J League. I know that's sort of changing a little bit, maybe with Celtic bringing more players, and you can see how well they do. So there's a bit more respect coming on the Japanese league. But still, if you're a Japanese player and you're playing in Portugal, you've got more chance of going to those bigger clubs. So I can completely get the reasoning for him going there. And I hope he does really well, because as much as I've gone against him in Japanese national team discussion, I'm not thinking he should be starting there. I think as a J-League player, I think he's been magnificent. And as a left wing back, I thought he was really good for Nagoya last season. So hopefully it works out for him. But yeah, I can absolutely understand why the complete frustration that goes around. But it's every club as well. And only really Furuhashi has gone for a reasonable enough amount of money, but even that is not what he was valued at, it should be valued at, really. So, yeah, I can completely understand the widespread frustration that supporters must be feeling.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so, of those outs, I guess, yeah, Leo Silva and Soma played the most in 2022, so it'll be interesting to see how they are replaced by Kenta Hasegawa. But yes, for Grampus in 2023, a lot will hinge on Kasper Juncker's mood and his fitness and how well he gets along with Hasegawa, who of course has history, of falling out with the temperamental foreign players. Perhaps Juncker is just misunderstood, and obviously his talent is undeniable, but it didn't work out for him at Urawa under Ricardo Rodriguez, and the new Reds boss Maciej Skorża decided to sanction his loan to Nagoya rather than bring him back into the fold. Takuji Yonemoto might just have enough left in his legs to do a low-rent Leo Silva impression in midfield after returning from loan at Shonan. Experienced defender Yuki Nogami should play quite a bit after moving from Hiroshima. And we spoke positively about Ryuji Izumi's return from Kashima last week, Johnny. But Junker is undoubtedly the key signing.
Yeah, it's you know, we're talking about J-Preds, and every year in J1, there's always a team that shoots up like 7, 8, 9, 10 places, and there's always a team that shoots down a number of places. And, you know, Nagoya, the Junker effect could be, I mean, Junker starts banging them in, Nagoya could potentially be a wild card title contender. Or if as you mentioned, Mr. Hasegawa does have a history of falling out with players, and I think we'll probably know quite soon, because I think with Hasegawa, you're very much either in or you're out. Mm. And you mentioned Yonemoto. I'm not particularly convinced he's in with Hasegawa, given his history. But I think, yeah, if things get off and rocking well, and they finally have that kind of consistent goal scorer after, you know, Joe came in and did really well and then left, and then Svierchok came in and did really well, and then, you know, he said the ban. So if Junker hits the ground running with Nagai and Matthias up front, that is a really potent attack, which just wasn't there for most of last season. And then you've added Nogami at the back, because I think, you know, I know he's as a J-Pod favourite, but Maruyama, I believe, is injured again, and he had his injury problems last year, and he's kind of coming towards the end of his career as a main starter, I think. Mm. According to transfer market, Inagaki, Morishita and Nagasawa all have varying degrees of injury as well. So it might be quite a tough start for Nagoya. But yeah, Junker, he's always entertaining in social media. Comes across a nice guy there. I don't know him personally. I don't know. We mentioned with Ralph the other week, we don't know exactly what went on behind the scenes at Urawa. But yeah, it's really interesting to see him coming in. And just further to what we're saying about Soma, because he played all 34 games last season. He didn't start them all, but mostly as the left wing back. And then, I mean, I've got Izumi starting there, but you've also got Uchida's come back from loan from FC Tokyo, could play there. You could potentially switch Morishita over to the left and maybe have Nogami or Ishida on the right. But yeah, it looks like, you know, because I think putting Izumi there all the time, it takes away from his quality maybe further up the field. And Hasegawa is going for that back three. He prefers a back four from his history, but they don't really have a left back to make that work if they were to go to a back four. So I really see it as a sort of 3-4-2-1 or 3-5-2. And they don't have a particularly deep squad. So, you know, if Junker doesn't work out or these injuries, like the key players like Inagaki or Morishita, Maruyama, if they don't come back quickly, you know, Nagoya could shoot either way down the table. So it's really hard to pin them down. How about Sam? I know you want to talk about Junker, and also how do you feel, like, are Nagoya going to be challenging at the top, or are they going to be sliding down?
Yeah, they're one of the really interesting ones. They've been in various positions in my draft for J-Pred. I could, as you said, if everything goes really well and Junker really matches with Matthias and Nagai, I think there's no reason that they couldn't win the league. They're defensively very good. I want to allay some fears from Nagoya supporters. Maruyama, Inagaki and Morishita are all training. They've all been okay in pre-season. It would have been a nightmare if they'd all been out. But yeah, that back three plus Nogami, I think, is a very solid signing. Can play wing back as well. So I think that's really good. There are three issues. One is if Junker just falls out with Hasegawa and it all falls apart. And then, yeah, that's a terrible, it might be a terrible season for Nagoya. The other ones are who's playing alongside Inagaki in midfield. I don't see a real standout option there. I know Leo Silva played a lot last season, but I think he was quite clearly on the wane towards the end of the year, often being subbed at half time or very early into the second half. So I understand the need to replace him. They brought in Riku Yamada, who has been injured throughout preseason, so maybe he might be the option. But at the moment, I'm a little concerned there. And wing back, as Johnny mentioned, I think Uchida and Izumi have been sharing that role. I don't think Hasegawa is particularly convinced on either of them. So that's a slight concern, but it'll all be blown out of the water if Matthias and Junker are on the same page, because Matthias, I think, is one of, if not the best player in the J-League in terms of his ability ability to drag a team to any sort of attacking outlets. I mean, he was so good last year, either on the wing or playing as a striker, as he ended up having to do for large parts of the season. So if he can combine with Juncker, and I think the way that Nagoya set up, it's going to be quite counter-attacking. I think that really suits the way that Juncker plays. So I think everything, fingers crossed for Nagoya, it could work out and be brilliant. So, yeah, they are very much in the conversation for my top four in J-Pred. But, yeah, there are still just a couple of issues there. But, yeah, Ben, you've seen, obviously, Hasegawa at FC Tokyo a lot. He's done okay in terms of results occasionally. Do you think his managerial style combined with this squad is enough to lift Nagoya into real contention?
Yes, I do, actually. And, I mean, I'm not his greatest fan. Saying that, of course, he did take FC Tokyo to their highest ever league finish in 2019. And you would think he would still have some credits in the bank on my behalf. But, yeah, I guess the way he left the club the frustrations around what went on in 2021, which just wasn't good enough, left a sour taste in my mouth. But, we saw last season that he was able to keep them solid enough at the back. The goals against record was terrific again. It wasn't obviously Ficadenti-esque, but it was it was good enough, and it was the numbers in attack just let them down. So yeah, this signing of Juncker, it could be the difference between another mid-table finish and a genuine ACL challenge. And it might turn out that 2022 was the outlier, because as we mentioned, they'd finished in the top six the two previous seasons before that, having roared up the table from the bottom half the previous season. So yeah, Chris asked us if we think Juncker is a good signing, and is he enough? Do they have enough if his injury problems return? I guess, it would be foolish to expect 34 starts from Juncker. Sam, I'll come back to you because I know he's your one to watch. But, I mean, yeah, if he's on his game, and as you say, if he's able to link up with Mateus, as all Grampus supporters hope he will be able to, with obviously Nagai just providing, out of this world speed off the left. I mean, yeah, it could be frightening. And that's something we haven't said about Nagoya up front for quite a while.
No, very much could be. I think Nagai, obviously, he's got slight flaws in terms of finishing ability occasionally. But but his raw pace it will create space for Juncker and Mateus to operate in. That's like the main thing that I think he'll be involved with. But also, he gets enough chances. He'll get goals eventually. And he was quite good for my fantasy team at the end of last season. So, yeah, I'm quite happy with him. But, yeah, I think it's got all the makings of a fantastic and dynamic trio up front. And it depends what was true about Juncker's injury record last year, because Rodriguez claimed for the most of the season that Juncker had injury issues. Juncker on more than one occasion on Twitter said, "I'm fine, I'm not injured, I don't know what you're talking about." So if it was just a falling out that was covered up with, "Oh, he's injured," then maybe if he gets on board with Hasegawa, and then he's absolutely fine, and then we can see the best of him. But I know he has had a slight niggle already in training to start this season. So, yeah, it's just if he's fit, if he's on board with everyone, I think it can really work. It's just, how much of that, the fallout with Rodriguez was Juncker's doing, how much was Rodriguez's doing, and can everyone just get along at Nagoya and really sort them out? Because, yeah, it just looks a fantastic front three. I wouldn't want to be a defender coming up against that three on a counter-attack. I think most defences in the J-League would crumble with that, and I think Mateus will be absolutely delighted that he's got someone to try and find rather than having to do absolutely everything on his own.
Yeah, very well put there, Sam. All right, so, Johnny, it's an interesting question from Kevin, and it concerns the other end of the pitch. Kevin wonders, do we think that missing out on the World Cup squad, the Australian World Cup squad, and the unnecessary drama around that will affect Mitch Langerak? I guess I probably should be answering that myself as an Australian. But, I mean, I would just imagine that Langerak will yeah, the professional that he is, he'll get on with his job. And I mean, I'm sure he'll be reinvigorated by the changes, especially Juncker coming in up the other end of the pitch. He'll have high hopes for his side this season. And I'm sure while he would have loved obviously to be involved in the World Cup, that's now just a distant memory for him, and he'll be fully focused on the season ahead.
Yeah, it's an interesting question from Kevin, and I'd fully agree with you, Ben. I don't really see any issues. If anything, it would only serve to inspire him to even greater heights if he's capable of those. Because, you know, since he's come to Japan, he's been the starter for Nagoya. He's been consistent year in, year out, and he's not really been involved with the Australian squad for the majority of that time. He's also gone through COVID, where I believe the borders in Australia were closed for something like 2 years, so he couldn't really go home. And I believe he became a father during that time, and then his family couldn't come out to visit him. So he's already had a tough time in that respect until now. So not being selected for the World Cup, while disappointed, he probably wouldn't have played, like he wouldn't have been the main starter anyway. So if anything, it just gave him more time to recuperate, spend time with his family, you know, get in mental shape for the season to come, and potentially return to that top three, top five where Nagoya have been for a good chunk of his time in Japan.
Yes, indeed. Now, Sam's already spoken about his one to watch for Nagoya. It's Kasper Juncker, Johnny, but yours is Haruya Fuji.
Yes, so maybe a little more under the radar. So he'd only played 10 J1 games before last season. And then I know Hasegawa's got a bit of stick from FC Tokyo fans because he didn't really develop many young players there when there was plenty in the squad. But, you know, at Gamba before, he definitely did a good job of bringing in not everyone but by any means, but developing a few players there. And then Fuji is someone I think we can say has been firmly given his chance by Hasegawa at Nagoya when he went to that back three formation. I actually remember, I think, potentially the game that inspired him to change the system was that Gamba beat them 3-1 at Panasonic Stadium, and it was Fuji and Thiago at the back that day, and they were just all over the place. And then when Nakatani and Maruyama came back, they put up that back three with Fuji mostly in the middle. And, you know, with those two either side of you and with Mitch Langerak behind you, there's only so far you can go wrong. So I think he really grew into that role. And, you know, I think if we were to be fair to fans of other teams, because we're selling off Mao Hosoya and Adsuki Ito in previous weeks, I think Fuji is someone, you know, we talked about Soma, and he might be someone you might see going off to Belgium or Portugal if he has a good first half of the year or a good season with Nagoya this year. How about Sam? How highly or not do you rate Fuji?
Yeah, I thought he had a fantastic season last year. Obviously, they brought in Thiago Pagnussat from Cerezo at the start of last year, and I think generally the expectation was that he would start, and he looked perfect for that back three. But Fuji just got in and never looked back. I think it really helps having Nakatani and Maruyama either side of you. I mean, they're very good defenders that are going to guide you through. But I think, yeah, he grew in confidence throughout that season, looked so comfortable in that position as if he had been there for many years. I think I completely agree with you that another season like that, or half a season like that, then absolutely he could be in Europe. But yeah, just so comfortable on the ball, so good raw athleticism, I think, as well. And yeah, just looked absolutely looked the part. So I think with Hasegawa, especially if you've got that quality there, it's very difficult for anyone to look past that. So yeah, I completely agree with you picking him out as one to watch, and I'm sure he'll only grow as this season goes on. And yeah, looking forward to seeing a lot more from him this year.
All right, terrific stuff. So the manager then, we've mentioned him quite a bit already. Kenta Hasegawa spent 6 years with Shimizu, 5 with Gamba, and 4 with FC Tokyo. Are you sensing a pattern here, listeners? Sam, will he make it to a third year with Grampus if he doesn't lift them considerably up the table? It sounds like the expectations for yourself and Johnny are that he will. So I guess if that doesn't happen, will they bring him back, or will they move on again?
I think Nagoya are a team that will probably move managers on. They give them a bit of time, but not too much. You have to be challenging for those ACL places, maybe, and have to be in them. So if they are not in this top four, or at least not close to it, I think he'd probably be shown the door, because I know they haven't spent necessarily as much money in the last couple of years, but generally they have a pretty decent budget. They like to bring in players. They like to be up at the upper echelon of the J League. So yeah, I think he has to really get them firing this season. When you bring in Juncker, I know it's only a loan deal, but they'll have probably had to pay Reds a fair bit to get that loan deal over. And it just, that brings up the expectations that they have to be challenging. So yeah, I can see if it doesn't go well, or if there's a falling out and an initial issue, I think, yeah, there's a chance even in during the season that Hasegawa does go if it doesn't really kick off. But yeah, if they're not in the ACL, I think this might be his last season.
All right. Yeah, well, Johnny, we both have experience of Hasegawa managing our clubs before and, leaving in perhaps not the best of circumstances. So, I certainly don't wish ill of him or anything like that. As I said, he took Tokyo to their highest ever league finish. And obviously, yeah, took Gumba to the treble, Johnny. So I'm sure you probably never have a bad word said against him. But, I guess at times he appears to kind of wear out his welcome. It might be too early in his Nagoya tenure for that. But, I mean, yeah, as positive as we've been throughout this preview, I mean, there obviously is still plenty that could go wrong for them.
Yeah, I mean, clearly with that 5-year spell you mentioned at Gamba, I think four and a half of those 5 years were brilliant and laden with trophies and success. So I don't have too many bad words to say about Kenta Hasegawa, but I would go back to what I said last week when we were talking about Sapporo and Misha Petrovic. And I mentioned, like, you know, they got rid of Figadente and they wanted to change the playing style. Well, I think Nagoya, I'm sure they won't, but they themselves as a club would have to bear the brunt of someone like Kenta Hasegawa, who's more of a, you know, I think we talked about it last year, like what were you really expecting? You know, he's not known for playing, he's known for playing effective football, but not particularly attractive football. And, you know, this snuck into that eighth last season. The word I wrote down was uninspiring, given the way things had ended at Tokyo and how Nagoya had finished their previous season. I thought it was an uninspiring appointment, and then they had an uninspiring season. So, yeah, Hasegawa, he knows how to get results. And he has won, like, you know, he's won titles with Gamba. He's got Tokyo to second, the highest ever league placing. But, you know, there is a bit of a temper behind the scenes. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to follow Nagoya. I would tend to say, yeah, he'll probably see it the year, but barring a massive public bust-up with Juncker or something like that. But what Nagoya as a club, what they're actually expecting, are they expecting genuine top three? Or are they, is top six okay? I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see Hasegawa do well, but yeah, seeing him staying beyond the 3 years that you're suggesting from your pattern is very difficult to predict right now.
Yeah, no, fair enough then. All right, so I guess as we wrap up this preview then, I think, Sam, you're extremely positive about their outlook. So are they in your current top four in your J-Pred?
This changed so often on like a minute-by-minute basis. At the moment, I have them fourth, but this time next week, they might be sick, they might be second, I don't know. So until I've nailed it down, I'm not going to commit to anything, but they're a tentative fourth at the moment. Johnny, what about you? Where do you see Nagoya? Do you think an ACL place is realistic for them?
I mean, I haven't got my full J League table. I've kind of gone for what's the top four and the bottom three at the moment, and Nagoya are currently in my very much in the hunt for second to fourth, but could also finish like 14th or something if things go wrong. So, yeah, it's either top four or it's bottom half for me. I think it's going to go, it's not going to be last season eighth. I think it's going to veer very much one way or the other. And yeah, maybe ask me next week and I'll be able to say what I think it is, fourth or 14th. How about Ben?
Yeah, I mean, they don't do things by halves, do they? So, yeah, I mean, if Juncker works out perfectly, and it goes as swimmingly as we've outlined that it might in this preview, then yeah, I would have them in my top six. But I could also see it, you know, Hasegawa just leaving the handbrake on for too long, and it maybe just not gelling as much as we hope it would, hope it will, and that the Grampus supporters will be expecting it too. So, I'm kind of hedging my bets. As I said, I haven't nailed down any predictions at all in terms of places in the table for clubs. But, yeah, Grampus are at the bottom of my top six currently. So, yeah, between fourth and sixth, I suppose, if I can narrow it down a little bit further. All right, then. So they will truly be a fascinating club to watch in 2023 at Nagoya Grampus. We will take a very quick break, and then we'll talk about one of the success stories from 2022, Sanfrecce Hiroshima. Welcome back. Last week, we said Kashiwa were the surprise packets of the 2022 season, and considering expectations for them were so low at the start of last season, I would stand by that. But in terms of an in-season transformation, Hiroshima were absolutely outstanding. With new manager Michael Skibba working remotely throughout pre-season and unable to take control until the start of March, Sanfrecce were winless in their first five league games. And as I mentioned many times last year, they played a battle of the bottom at Shonan in match day six. But they won that, and their first win of the season started a run of just one loss in 12 as they roared up to fourth. They did temporarily slip to sixth early in the second half of the season, but then a run of five straight wins took them to the summit with six games left as they negotiated their way to the finals of both the Emperor's Cup and the Levain Cup on consecutive weekends. The first of those was lost in stunning fashion on penalties to J2 Kofu, but the following weekend, they stunned Cerezo Osaka with two goals in second half stoppage time to hoist the trophy for the first time. They only won one of their last six in the league, but third place and a return to the ACL was secured, with Gakuto Notsuda, Makoto Mitsuta and Skibba were the J-Talk Team of the Season selections. And Sam, what a season it was for the Sanfrecce faithful. Skibba turned what was a drab and, frankly, for the most part, boring Hiroshima side into one of the league's great entertainers for most of last season.
Yeah, it was absolutely unbelievable, and drab is exactly what Hiroshima had been for a few years before that. But the job that Skibba did was absolutely incredible, absolutely transformed that team. I think helped along the way by the emergence of Makoto Mitsuta, who I think, bar Kaoru Mitoma, had the biggest impact in the first season that I've seen of anyone in the J-League. They got their system right, they got their pressing right, they got the whole way that the team, everyone bought into the way that Skibba was going about things, and it just worked, and that rise is absolutely remarkable. A slight shame that they lost the Emperor's Cup final, although Kofu in ACL was probably worth it for everyone. But what a season it was. Absolutely did. They were magnificent, and what have they got for an encore? How can they carry that on? That's the big question I think everyone's interested in. But yeah, last season, they were just absolutely magnificent. Players like Notsuda, previously unheralded, having great seasons, and that was the case throughout the team. Everyone played at their absolute best or limits, or better than we'd seen them play before. And yeah, full credit to Skibba. It was absolutely magnificent. And yeah, it was a joy to watch Hiroshima last year.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Now, Johnny, I've seen the R word mentioned quite a bit when we've spoken about Hiroshima in the Patreon and only line group. That's regression, not relegation. And, and Graham Frecce says the surprise team of the 2022 season surely won't repeat that success. But I want to know, why do people think that? It's because of the poor start to the season, or indeed, I suppose you could say, the poor finish to it as well. Are people just forgetting about the middle kind of 20 games of the season, when Hiroshima's form was pretty much better than anyone's? And why would a team go backwards? A team that's basically only lost Yuki Nogami and Tomoya Fuji. I mean, Fuji's emergence was terrific, and Nogami is a very experienced part of the Hiroshima back line. But I'm not really buying this regression stuff.
I mean, I can see regression if you're talking about fourth or fifth, but I don't see any kind of any reason that they would seriously fall away. I guess maybe, you know, at the start of last season, if we'd sat here and said, yeah, I think Hiroshima will finish third, then most people at home would probably be thinking, yeah, third bottom. They were very much the team that just like shot up the league, and unexpectedly so, a little bit like, you know, as we mentioned with Sagan Tosu, just getting the best out of unheralded players, and, you know, Mitsuda coming in from university, and, you know, Notsuda, Kawamura, Taichi Matsumoto all coming back from loan spells. It's not like they were they were throwing cash about. And you know, with Piero Sotirio coming in at the back end of last year, obviously he was the hero in the Levan Cup. Didn't really play much in the league, but I think, as I mentioned in a previous pod, you know, the summer transfer window is quite near the end of the season, so it tended to be players that came into sides at the bottom get thrown straight in the deep end, whereas, you know, people like Sotiriou or like Jan Matthias at Yokohama F. Mariners, that they joined the team at the top of the league, they didn't really play much. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Pieros is going to do this year. And, you know, I mean, a bit like Juncker, I suppose, you know, he is going to be the focal point of the attack. So, you know, if he gets goals, then I absolutely see Hiroshima as a potential title winner, because, you know, as you were talking about next week with Marinos and Frontale losing players, I think this year is very much ripe for a, you know, quote unquote surprise winner. Mm. I could see them slipping away a few places, but I don't, like, they're not going to slip back to mid table being boring and mediocre again. I just don't see that. But if someone wanted to say, you know, they'll lose out in the shuffle and finish fifth or sixth, but possibly. But yeah, I think potential on the other side to the coin, a genuine title contender as well.
Right, yeah. Which side of the fence do you sit on there, Sam? Are you expecting them to be slightly come back to the pack, I suppose? I'm not really sure what the best way to describe it is. I don't think they're going to suddenly, you know, turn into pumpkins after what they were able to do last season. And, you know, they've got a taste of what winning a trophy feels like under Skibber. And, you know, surely they'll want to do that a lot more this season. So for me, yeah, I see them right up at the sharp end again. I guess, you know, I could be convinced otherwise, but what are your general expectations for them? I suppose, yeah, considering and how much, I suppose, do you think the losses of Nogami and Fuji in particular might affect them?
Well, I won't be talking you out of having Hiroshima quite high up the table, haven't you? I've got them provisional poll in my J-Pred at the moment. They've lost Nogami, who played a little bit right wing back, but not too much. It wasn't necessarily first choice. Fuji, they he didn't play towards the end of last season, so they've got options there. They brought in Shichi, who can allow Kashua to play on that right wing back role potentially. Chajimas can play there. The youngster Shuta Nakano looks like he could probably play in that position as well. So I think they've got options to cover anyone that has left, and they've not lost anyone I don't think who's vital to the team. And they've got really decent depth as well throughout the squad. I think it's a really well-assembled team. I think what might come into and might go in their favour towards the end of the seasons, you mentioned that they qualify for the Champions League in third, but if Reds win the Champions League, the current Champions League that's still being hung over, they take away Hiroshima's spot, which obviously it's not great, you want to be in the Champions League, but if they're out of it, then they're not playing and going to Australia in midweek in the back end of the season. They're not going to Korea, China, wherever. And I think that kind of frees them up for a clearer run at it rather than Marinos and Frontale and Reds, as it would be, having to play those extra games. So I think that could be a slight blessing in disguise at the end of the season if Reds do them a sort of favour in that way. But yeah, I really like the squad. I think there's nobody that's necessarily too old. They've still got very good players that are still going to develop. Mitsuda will get better. I think Kawamura will get better. Morishima's still only 25, so he's got plenty of room to grow. And if they get more out of Sotiriou in terms of his fitness this season, yeah, I just think they're a really well-balanced squad. I think with the losses that Marinos have had and Frontale have had, I say, why not Hiroshima for the title this year? So, yeah, I'm very positive about them.
Right. Okay, then. So, Johnny, Sam's just mentioned Takaki Shichi coming in. And we mentioned him, of course, in part 3A, coming in from Fukuoka. He's the only arrival from a J1 club that I can see on Michael Masters' spreadsheet. You might be able to shed some light on some of the youth and university players that have come in. And yes, I note that one of them is from Juntendo University, so I'm getting in ahead of you there. But as an aside, Martin had a question from Patreon on the new keeper Yudai Tanaka from Martin's beloved Blaublitz Akita. And Martin says he's curious what we think of Tanaka's chances of getting regular game time this year. He's a great shot stopper, but he really needs to work on his distribution as well as his decision making, Martin adds. I guess it's pretty hard to see Tanaka displacing Keisuke Osako, Johnny, but perhaps he could get some games in the Levain Cup.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, Hayashi started the first five games last year, but then as soon as Skiba entered the country, it was Osako all the way. And, you know, he does have an error or two or a bad game in him, but he's generally got better as he's got older, even though it feels like he's been around for years, but he's still very young for a goalkeeper. But, you know, if fit, I'd imagine Osako will play all the league games and Tanaka will be on the bench and playing in cups. I think Martin's obviously a big Akita fan. He's quite strict on his evaluation of Tanaka. I think the season they get promoted from J3, he was hands down the best goalkeeper in J3. And then it's kind of 2 years with Akita. There's been ups and downs, but I think he's generally been one of the top in the top third of goalkeepers in that league. So I'm not surprised to see him getting a move as a backup at quite a big club. I don't think he's really ready to start at a club like Hiroshima, week in, week out. But I think he's a solid signing as a backup. And Yamasaki, I wasn't actually going to joke about his university this week, but I was going to mention him because I think he's down as a sort of centre-back who can also play as a holding midfielder. So I think he's the kind of long-term replacement for Tsukasa Shiotani. So again, he gives them an option because he can cover two positions. And then maybe someone that James Taylor would be familiar with, Hiroya Matsumoto. He had a really good loan spell in midfield for Zvigan Karazala last season, scored a few goals. Again, he would come in and add a bit of depth in midfield. And he also tried to emulate players like Notsuda Kawamura and Hiroya Matsumoto, who came back from loan to such good effect last year. I think he can also technically cover wing-back. If they really need cover there, he might be able to fit in there. There's young Koshimichi. I don't really know a lot about him, but if the youth system is produced, people like Mitsuda and Kawamura in recent years, so you can potentially expect some decent things from him. And then the one player I've not mentioned, I think Sam's going to talk about more, is Nakano. But I know we've had a bit of feedback, and I've had a bit of feedback for picking him as the first choice right wing back for Hiroshima. So I'm obviously hoping he starts. I remember a couple of years ago, I think I had Keigo Tsunemoto down as my starting right back at Kashima, and I got a bit of kind of people were a bit curious as to why I'd chosen him there, and then he obviously proved himself. So I always feel like if I met Keigo Tsunemoto, so I don't know you, but kind of shake your hand. So you helped my blog along. So Nakano, he shapes up as a good player. So I mean, Sam, do you want to add any more about him or any of the other signings?
Yeah, I'm Nakano. I mean, of all the teams in the J-League, the most open in terms of pre-season and footage of their games has been Hiroshima, so I've got to see a fair bit of him. And he's been lining up on the right side of a back four, actually. I think it might be due to Hayato Araki still getting back to fitness after last year, but he's been playing right back, and it looks technically wonderful. He was a specially designated player. I think he came off the bench in the opener last year against Sagan Tosu. But yeah, he just looks the part. He could play, I think he's probably going to be playing that right wing back position once they go back to that back three. But yeah, he looks like he's got a really good engine on him. He's a good passer of the ball, looks so comfortable. So I've liked everything that I've seen in the kind of highlights packages I've been able to see off Hiroshima. So yeah, it looks, I think you're right there to have him as a starter going into this year. Just looks, absolutely looks the part. The other ones that you mentioned, Hiroya Matsumoto has been kind of playing the centre back, actually, and he's coming in, filling in at centre back. So a decent option there. I think his main job will be midfield, but yeah, it looks like good versatility in that position. I've liked a lot of the youngsters, actually. Sota Koshimichi has got a lot of game time during pre-season. He again looks technical. It looks like he can play in numerous positions, central midfield, he can play over on the right wing. And there's another one, I don't think necessarily for this season, but for years to come, there's a 16-year-old Ghanaian Japanese player called Shota Kofi, and he's been in there, and I think he must be like, it's hard to get perceptive of height, but I think he must be like 5 or 6 inches taller than anyone else on the pitch. So he really does stand out in that. But yeah, for a large physical presence, like just his ability on the ball, his touch has been, it really stood out to me. So maybe in the Levain Cup, we might see a 16-year-old come through and really burst on there. But yeah, I think everyone looks pretty decent in our preseason, and Nakano, I think, should be one to watch as a like real bolter going into this first 11.
Well, that's amazing. You should mention that 16-year-old, Sam, because Harry had a question about whether Skipper may rotate more and focus on winning the league rather than going full strength in the cups. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'd be looking to bring youngsters through, especially in the Levain Cup. And, yeah, that sounds like that fella might be Corfi, was it? Yeah, might be one most definitely to watch when Hiroshima's Levain Cup campaign gets up and running. So, yeah, all right then. We've got Sam's one to watch done there in Shuto Nakano, and yeah, for we all hope he gets the starting nod, Johnny, to make your blog. Well, obviously it's as good as it always is, but yeah, it's great to get one right, isn't it? Especially if a couple of people are questioning a choice that you make. So yeah, how about your one to watch then, Johnny? Obviously Mitsuta stole pretty much all of their headlines in 2022 for Sanfrecce, but your pick for one to watch burst through late on in the season and definitely took some of Mitsuta's headlines away from him.
Yeah, I've gone for another Sanfrecce youth product who I've mentioned earlier, Takumu Kawamura. As you say, he missed, I think, about 3 months earlier on in the season. So he lost a bit of the momentum he'd built up. He'd had a very good season with Ehime, who I think he spent 4 seasons on loan with in J2. So they struggled, but he definitely shone. And then I think in all competitions, got 7 goals and 2 assists in 27 appearances. You know, he missed the penalty, unfortunately, in the Emperor's Cup, but it was his goal that took it to penalties. You know, he very much seems to have the Midas touch. I think there were some disagreements about who should have won the J1 goal of the season competition, but Kawamura did end up winning it with the fantastic goal, it has to be said. And you know, he just seems to be the right place at the right time. He just burst through when Hiroshima really needed it. Him and, you know, with him and Notsuda, it's such a great story. You know, players out and loan in J2 and coming in and playing really well. And, you know, he can play a bit further forward just off the main striker. He can also play kind of wing back if you absolutely have to. Great versatility. And I think that he's got a great future on him as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing if he can stay fit for the whole year. And, you know, if Hiroshima are in the ACL, you get chances there playing in the league, playing in the cups. I think you'll see him playing a lot this year. And growing into more of a kind of leadership role and really taking the games by the scruff of the neck, which is what Hiroshima needs. So, I mean, you know, Sam, you obviously picked out Nakano as your one to watch, but what are your thoughts on Kawamura?
Yeah, I mean, what an impact he had right at the end of last season as well. And another one who can play in a couple of different roles. I saw him come off the bench as a wing back in the certain games. But once he got involved centrally, I thought he was absolutely magnificent. A real eye for goal as well, not only from 70 yards, but also further up the pitch. So, yeah, another one that just took off and more fairly unexpectedly as well, as a lot of these players did. But yeah, all the ability in the world in midfield, and that partnership him and Notsuda, I thought, worked terrifically well. Unfortunately, he's been a bit in and out of pre-season. I think he's got a couple of niggles, so maybe the start of the season he might not necessarily start games. But I think, yeah, they've got a real gem on their hands there, and hopefully he can get himself an injury-free season and really kick on, because yeah, I liked everything I saw of him last season. Is there anyone that you'd like to pick out, Ben, that yeah really stood out to you last season, or that you're looking forward to seeing this year?
I'm really interested to see if Gakuto Notsuda can back up his 2022, because as we said so many times last season, it looked like he was out in the cold from Hiroshima. He'd obviously been out on loan for so long, and then yeah, just the way that again, to give Skipper some more praise, the way he was able to work him into a key role in central midfield where Notsuda thrived, it was absolutely stunned me, to be honest. I thought he was finished as a not only as a Hiroshima player but as a J1 player. But yeah, to to be as prominent as he was, and yeah, to get a spot in the J-Talk team of the season, which was obviously hardly a higher honour can be bestowed on a J-League player, can it? So yeah, can he back up again, and can he provide good support to Kawamura, who is still obviously developing next to him? It should be really fascinating to watch. And if I can double dip, Sotiriou is a really interesting one as well. And a couple of questions on him. Chris and Graham Freche both mentioned Sotiriou, and I guess along similar lines to Juncker at Nagoya, if he is obviously not coming into a new situation, but if he can really blossom and develop, then alongside Mitsuta and Morishima up front for Hiroshima, that is absolutely frightening, I think. So I think, Sam, you've pretty much already nailed your colours to the mast, haven't you? They are currently top of your pile. So, Johnny, I'm gathering you're not quite as optimistic, but you probably have them up towards the sharp end as well?
I'm currently operating on they'll move two places in one position or the other. So they'll either be champions or fifth, but TBC, but I back up what Sam says. Genuine title contender is what I would say. But what about you, Ben?
Yeah, same here. Yeah, definitely in my current top six. And I just don't get the regression talk at all, to be honest, because I think you can quite clearly see that Yokohama F. Marinos and Kawasaki could be almost as good as last year, but I don't think they're going to be noticeably better. And with Sotiriou in and hopefully, as I said, fit and firing, then I think Hiroshima could definitely be better than last year. So they are in the thick of things, I think. And it's going to be brilliant because, as I said, Skipper's just turned them around in the space of 12 months, and now seemingly the sky is the limit. All right, then, gentlemen, that is, our second episode of the week just about wrapped up. Episode, 3B of our J1 season previews. So, Johnny, it's at this point, and it's a sad thing that we have to do this, isn't it, Sam? But we'll have to bid you farewell for our previews, Johnny, and thank you ever so much for all the hard work that you've put in to these episodes. Our patrons obviously are very thankful for the depth charts as well, and your overall contribution to these last 3 weeks of previews has been absolutely massive. So, mate, we can't thank you enough.
Thanks very much, Ben. It's been great talking to you and Sam, and then also we had Daniel yesterday and Ralph last week. So I've really enjoyed being on these 3 weeks, but I know you've got some very good people coming on next week, so I'm looking forward to listening to it. And also for the patrons, I'll provide my depth charts for the five teams that have been discussed next week. So I look forward to hearing what comes out of another fascinating five teams next week. Thank you.
Absolutely outstanding, Johnny. Thanks again, mate, ever so much. And Sam, we're almost home, aren't we? It's the Super Cup on Saturday, and five more clubs to come in next week's episode. They will obviously be split into two episodes again, listeners, just to let you know. But last season's top two among the five teams to be previewed, and it'll be fascinating to see how F. Marinos get on in Saturday's Super Cup and how that will affect the preview that's coming up for the season ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to proper overreacting to whatever the result is on Saturday. Kofu win as they continue their rise in a fantastic season. But I echo exactly what you said about Johnny. It's always great to have him on, and he's been fantastic the last three episodes, but I bet he's delighted he might get to bed before midnight next Monday.
Yes, indeed. All right, so just a few mentions and shout-outs before we bid you farewell, listeners. Firstly, thanks to Craig, Chris, Kevin, Martin, Harry, and Graham Freche for their questions for episode 451. And thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. A big shout-out to Ryo Nakagawara, whose Shogun Soccer season previews are up and running in full swing. Search for Ryo on Twitter, and please do consider subscribing to Shogun Soccer. Ryo's previews are absolutely terrific. J-League Fantasy is back up and running, so you can, if you're on Twitter, J-League_Fantasy, to have a crack at that. It's back for another season. Sam looking for another top five finish. And the great man, Richie Palmer, has brought J-Pred back for 2023. So before Kawasaki and Yokohama F. Marinos kick off the new J1 season on Friday night, the 17th of February, get your J-Preds in. Gifu, at Gifu Richie on Twitter, has all the information for what you need to make your selections. And don't forget the hashtag J-Pred2023. All right, that's it for this episode of the J-Talk podcast. Once again, Sam and I would like to thank Johnny Nicol very much for his time on this episode and all of our previews to this point. So we'll be back with the five more teams, the final five teams before the big kickoff in next week's episodes. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.